I'm Catherine Henson, and today I'm going to be talking about my global issue in culture, identity and community, which is the struggle of individuals against social constructs, including those of religion and stereotypes. My books Persepolis, A Text in Translation by Marjane Satrapi and Othello by William Shakespeare present contrasting reactions to the influence of social constructs over one's own life. In Persepolis, we see Marjane tries to disobey society's confines relating to personal expression and identity. In the beginning of my extract, Marjane is buying prohibited tapes from the black market. In the second panel, the black market dealer is depicted as having two faces, a suggestion of the dangers he faces in distributing illicit tapes, as if one face is turned to Marjane and the other is looking over his shoulder for the authorities, so he won't get caught and punished under the harsh Sharia law. This indicates the constraints on personal liberties in Iran and emphasises Marjane's rebellion as she continues to buy tapes despite the risks. Marjane herself is shown to have two faces in the third panel, but unlike the dealer, this represents the her who seemingly abides by the strict regulations in line with Islamic law, and the her who refuses to unconditionally conform to these. Panel 2 and 3 also both have completely black backgrounds, with panel 3 even having no words or captions, both featuring just Marjane and the black market dealer. This suggests that Marjane, through her resistance to conform, is viewed in society as a criminal and sinner equal to the black market dealer, as she's surrounded completely by black, a symbol of evil, sin and transgression. Panel 2 and 3 are the only panels in my extract that have completely black backgrounds, and they're centred in the middle of the page. So Satrapi aims to focus the reader's attention to these so that we can realise that in relation to social constructs, Marjane is discordant. In panel 6, in the caption, a monologue of Marjane's thoughts reveals that the guidance of the revolution was supposed to put us back on the straight and narrow. The verb put is forceful and has connotations of a controlled, decisive action, therefore suggesting the lack of choice citizens had in being at the mercy of the authorities. Similarly, the collective pronoun us is passive in this phrase, which further critiques the regime as it represents the whole population, a collective, being hegemonised and the lack of freedom given to them. Satrapi invites us then to realise Marjane's bravery in not capitulating to the regime. The idiom of straight and narrow is used to represent virtue and morality, and hence explicitly separates Marjane from this path as she's part of the collective us, suggesting she is on a path of evil and immorality in direct opposition to the social constructs and rule that she lives under. From panel 4 onwards, we see the drawings of the gardens of the revolution. Panel 5 and 8 are best to see how the gardens are depicted with only the slightest detail. There is only necessary facial features drawn, and there's no detail on their chadors. We only see their faces and hands, which contrast with the finer details depicted on Marjane, where in panel 10, we even see the hemming on her denim jacket and the details on her Michael Jackson badge. It's worth noting that even the black market dealers in panel 1, despite wearing all black like the guardians, still have some detail on their clothes. We can infer from this that Satrapi aims to characterise the guardians solely by their dedication to the religion, the prescribed goal for women under these authorities. Marjane detail characterises her as a person with an identity other than her religion, and therefore suggests that in relation to the social constructs, she is defiant and is not fulfilling the expected roles that she, as a woman in Iran, should be filling. And by towering over Marjane in panel 8, the guardians symbolise the overwhelming power and jurisdiction of the regime as representatives of the authorities, diminishing Marjane. Yet she still goes on in the extract, in panels 8, 11 and 13, to lie to the guardians and try and exert any power she has in order to not get into trouble. In panel 8, she says, "I wear these because I play basketball." 11, "It's Malcolm X, the leader of black Muslims in America." And she protests that her jeans shrank in panel 13. The reader acknowledges how she blatantly lies, especially as current readers will have a full knowledge of who Malcolm X is. Thereby, Marjane is further characterised as being contumacious and non-submissive. And in Islam, her lies would dissociate her from God. Therefore, Satrapi aims to inform the reader as to how Marjane prioritises her personal expression and identity over her religion. Throughout my extract, Marjane repeatedly strays from the social construct she's expected to conform to. Her desire to live freely is consistently challenged and oppressed by the regime that she's forced to partially submit to due to the greater power of the regime. Still, she is able to create her own identity and flout some of these social constructs by wearing certain things and buying things illegally. Hence, the reader understands how Marjane conscientiously chooses to continue to struggle against the social constructs and refuses to let them have a large influence over her life. But contrastingly to Marjane, Othello ends up conforming to the societal stereotypes placed on him as a black man in the European Renaissance society. The extract opens with Othello claiming Desdemona was like a liar gone to burning hell. 'Twas I that killed her. Othello's exclamation and admittance of killing Desdemona highlights his lack of remorse, thereby characterising him as a ruthless murderer, reduced to nothing but his rage-filled actions. And the simile of Desdemona being a sinner further establishes how he's fueled by wrath rather than the distinguished general he's previously been portrayed as his passionate and accusatory tone, in combination with Desdemona as a sinner, who we know to be innocent, used by Shakespeare, exposes his psychomania and how his mind has been degraded through envy and paranoia. In this way, externally to others, he has become the archetype of the Moors in that society, the seemingly foreign and primitive group of people. A comparative metaphor is then used by Shakespeare to further accentuate Othello's otherness. As Amelia says, "O, the Moor angel she, and you the blacker devil." The imagery of Desdemona as an angel, a symbol of virtue and purity, contrasts Othello as the blacker devil, a manifestation of evil and chaos. The colour comparative blacker allows the reader and the audience to see how Amelia actively focuses on his skin colour. To her, his actions seem even more inhumane as he is surrounded by the associations of the colour black, as well as the stereotypes of black people in their white-dominated society. These stereotypes originate from the demonisation of the colour black in Christian iconography in the medieval period. The colour black had become a symbol of destruction known throughout Shakespeare's predominantly Christian society, and subsequently the black man had become a symbol in affiliation. The semantic field of perdition, later in my extract, further establishes these stereotypes. We see, thou art a devil, thou art rush as fire, and all depth in hell. The simile of rush as fire has connotations of being uncontrollable and frenzied, as how a fire spreads quickly and irrepressibly, Othello's anger is also uncontrollable and manic. Hence, Shakespeare exposes how he has let go of his dignity and is now behaving in the wild manner that others will associate with the conventional, less civilised Moors. And the semantic field is a repeating reminder of the sin that Othello has committed, hence intensifying the corruption of his mind, that he has let go of all of his morals, as well as the hard work he's put in to defy the preconceived ideas of what he would be. Then towards the end of the extract, Othello talks about Iago informing him of Desdemona's affair and refers to him as an honest man he is. And then further, almost at the end of the extract, he repeats this saying, honest, honest Iago. Othello's tricolon of the adjective honest exposes his complete ignorance to how he's been exploited by Iago, as he still believes Iago to be truthful. The dramatic irony here for the audience is overwhelming, in the sense that we've been witness to the manipulation of Othello by Iago, which transforms Othello from this distinguished character into a paragon of corruption. Hence, Shakespeare exposes further how Othello has been manipulated into conforming to the societal expectations and stereotypes of a black man in his society that he has tried to overcome. So both writers explore the conforming to or rejection of social constructs and expectations of characters, with Marjane struggling with yet successfully rejecting the pressures of religious and governmental authority, and Othello eventually conforming to the stereotypes of black people in his society. And both writers encourage the readers to reflect on the power of society to keep people in subjection to the roles prescribed for them, as well as realise that in all societies there is a battle of individuals against oppressive forces that try and dictate their identities.
Thank you very much. much, Katie. That was very impressive. I'd like to ask you about how the ideas, so you talked really, really comprehensively about how these global issues are explored in the two extracts. Can you talk to me a little bit about the way that your global issue is presented in the texts as a whole?
So with Othello, the first time we're introduced to Othello is actually Iago talking about him to other people, and he refers to him as Black Ram, and he immediately presents him as this wild and unsophisticated person. However, we know later on in the play that Othello is actually very sophisticated through how he speaks eloquently to Brabantio and the council. But because he's immediately portrayed by another person, a white person, who already has these preconceived ideas of who he is as a person, the reader, when or the audience, if they're watching it, can see how the apart from Othello, can see Iago and the contemporary view of black people as he sees him as this dangerous, less, you know, civilised person. And then in Persepolis, the religious pressures are explored throughout the entirety of book one. You know, Marjane in Persepolis is going to school and she's forced to wear her chador and abide by all these very strict regulations. However, she continues to try and defy these by actually, in one part, she gets expelled from school and she also, you know, leaves school and doesn't, you know, completely conform to these rules, further accentuating how she's, you know, being defiant of what she's expected to be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Can you talk about how your learner portfolio was used in preparation for your
author? So in my learner portfolio, I have some... I talked about the themes within Othello and Persepolis, and when I saw the link between people being confined to the labels that society are giving them for Othello, you know, the less civilised black man, and for Marjane, it's the you know, label of conforming as a woman to societal expectations in Iran, I was able to do some work on actually exploring further into these and then looking more contextually as to how, you know, in Othello, how do these stereotypes then come about? And that really interested me in, you know, therefore in Iran, how did the stereotypes and religious pressures come about for Marjane that she was trying so hard to defy?
Okay, thank you. You mentioned in your oral about Amelia kind of telling Othello that Iago has lied, essentially, about Desdemona's infidelity. And I think it's really interesting the extracts that you've chosen to be close to the end. Do you feel that Othello reclaims any of his sort of chosen identity by the end of the play, or do you think he is completely lost there?
Well, obviously in the end of the play he does die, and I think that is his last futile attempt to reclaim the dignity that he has left. You know, we've seen how he's just been manipulated throughout the whole play into believing Iago and then killing Desdemona. You know, his rage overtakes him. So he's then so almost abhorred with himself and ashamed of what he has done, in the way that he has actually conformed to what everyone wanted him and expected him to conform to, that then his last attempt to dismiss this and overcome this was to actually end his life. And I think in the end he does, through his death, he does actually reclaim some of his, you know, sophistication in that way.